Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday, and that means it's time for the Wrestling Inc. Monday Night Raw after show, and have we got a show for you. The battle lines between the Bloodline and the Contenders, and I guess the champion, are being drawn. We've got a bunch of stuff going down in the women's tag team division as well, and the Intercontinental Championship is the talk of the town. But before we get into all that, of course, allow me to introduce the crew. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by Justin Labar and Jimmy Corderis. Jimmy, you guys are celebrating 100 episodes over on the your Reffing It Up podcast. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It's a big milestone, but guess what? Finally, the ref is back on Wrestling Inc. And don't cut me off now, because the ref is on a roll. I am not only back on Wrestling Inc. You know what this means? This means that Triple J is back together, the best three-man post-game team on the planet. Triple J, brother Justin Labar, gentleman Jack Farmer, and yours truly, the ref, the man who has literally counted down more shoulders than IWC jabronis have Twitter followers. So if you want to be entertained and educated, you stay tuned. Buckle up your seatbelt, put up your seat back in the upright and tight position, locked in, and get ready for takeoff, because we are going to take you on a ride. If you smell what the ref, no wait, what Triple J is cooking.
Oh, hell yeah, Justin. You got to top that, man. You got a Roman Reigns respond. What do you got? Jimmy, I love that. That was incredible. Go ahead.
Yeet. What? Jimmy, are you drinking coffee right now?
No,
or better yet, or did you spike your coffee right now?
No, I took a little trip away from the missus. I feel refreshed and ready to go, man. And I'm just loving the ride we're on heading to WrestleMania. It's awesome.
Wait, did you take a trip with the missus or away from the missus?
No, with the missus, no.
I could have swore you said away from the missus.
I thought so, too. I was about to say, wow.
May have been accidentally slipped out there, but no. But it was,
I'm waiting for her to come in frame and just slap you.
Yeah, like Rock Slap Cody, pretty much.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Everyone loves it. The chat, Charlie Kidder saying, well done. We got a couple Tutgraph saying best promo ever, and Tommy O saying, damn, go Jimmy. I love it. You know, now that's a thing. You're going to have a new promo every single week, Jimmy. I hope you're ready.
Well, I can't do 20 minutes plus on my social media like The Rock does. I only do a minute. So it's going to be a challenge. Let's put it that way.
You can do 20 minutes plus. Just make sure you include a few minutes to talk some trash on Dave LaGreca and bust it open. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Ride those coattails.
Yeah, absolutely, buddy. I almost want to go out and get a pink robe.
You know what? Yeah, we should take all those guys over at Busted Open. But Justin, you're the fake Sting of the group here. Which side are you going to be on? Can we trust you, Justin?
The only thing for sure about LaBar is nothing's for sure.
Well, that is my segue into our first news item. And by the way, everyone, thank you for joining us. Like, comment, share, subscribe. Before we get into all the stuff that happened in WWE, of course, last night there was a big show, Revolution, Sting's final match. And Justin, since you had to sit through that that Jimmy Corderis promo, I'm going to let you take the first stab at this. I'll probably get all gushy on Wednesday, but tell me a bit about Sting, his retirement match. If you saw the show, what your thoughts on it were, and maybe just reflect on Sting.
Yeah, I did see the match. Shout out to Triller TV for helping hook up since they had the rights in the U.S. to watch it, so I was streaming it. And yeah, it was you know, great crowd. They got 14,000 plus, I think, in Greensboro, and it was, you know, and I tweeted, it's a long show, whatever. But the important thing is, by the time they got to Sting, the crowd was still there for it, and that's what mattered most. You just don't want to burn the crowd out and rob them of the main event experience. It was a very look. The entrance was very cool. It's awesome they got to include his sons, and that they each got to kind of cosplay, one Surfer Sting, one Wolfpack Sting. Great reaction to that. It was not the retirement match that I would have predicted 20 years ago Sting would have. I would have not thought there was going to be shards of glass and all of the gimmick there was. That said, you know, it's on par with some of the other hard. I mean, you know, he had been jumping off of balconies and the tables and this and that. So it's not like it was a complete left turn. You know, it kind of sums up some of his AEW run that he's had alongside Darby. Overall, it was fun. If you could just accept it, what it is, it was fun. He looked like he's having fun. Thank God he's okay. Thank God Darby's okay. Very fun, very classy send off that AEW's done all in the build up to it and for that night. You know, I could nitpick about the booking decision, but again, that is what it is, and maybe we talk about that. But overall, nice classy send off for Sting.
Yeah, Jimmy, Sting is one of my absolute all-time favorites, and someone as a personal favorite, and someone who I think is really one of the all-time greats. You know, going into this, I didn't know how I was going to feel about it, but I was totally worked up in emotion, and I said on Twitter, I felt like I was a kid watching this match. When he did his beating the chest thing, I totally popped for it, and like Justin said, I'm sure we could nitpick certain things, but at the end of the day, if wrestling's about feeling, I absolutely felt this one. But what say you? What were your thoughts on this final Sting match?
I'm like Justin. I didn't imagine his final match going to be like as crazy as it was. Let's put it that way. But you know what? I like the fact that, yes, I know they say the traditional way to go out is to go looking at the lights, elevating your next, you know, star, whoever that may be. But he did that while also going out as a winner, which mm-hmm. is, you know, a great thing. And he doesn't just deserve it. He earned that right. And he is such a good human being. He's my only regret is that I never got to officiate a Sting match in my career. And that is one of those bucket list items that I wish I could have ticked off. But no, I enjoyed it. I was entertained by it. I just wish that we had more time to experience his thanking of the crowd. Unfortunately, time constraints, I guess, with the pay-per-view and that sort of stuff, they kind of cut him short. But I saw the entire locker room emptied out onto the stage to acknowledge him, which was beautiful. It was awesome. And like you said, Justin, the crowd there sitting through that entire pay-per-view, because there was a lot going on. I mean, it was a stacked show, and you know, it was a strong pay-per-view. And them closing out the way they did with staying on top, you know, couldn't write it any better.
Jimmy, let me ask you this. Favorite version of Sting? What was your favorite?
You know what? It's going to sound weird, but I like Surfer Sting.
Because I love it.
You know, that's the one that made me go, hi, I like this guy originally. And I like the various iterations. It's kind of like, compare it to Undertaker. Because, you know, we saw the dead man persona, and then he became Biker Taker. And, you know, we saw the different iterations of him. Same thing with Sting, but you always go back to, you know, the original. And that's what I enjoyed most about it.
Purple necktie Undertaker. Best one. Yeah, it's hard to argue the Surfer Sting. I feel like I'm boring, but I mean, Crow Sting is how I'm always going to think of him. Justin, what was your favorite version of Sting?
I mean, Surfer Sting has the best matches, and that was my first sighting of him as well. You know, as I did a lot of archiving this past week, as we got ready for Busted Open and our tribute show to Sting, Surfer Sting has like the best matches. But I'm with you, Jack, in terms of Crow Sting, even though he didn't have a match for 18 months or 16 months, whatever it was, that story was so compelling, and the real time of how hot the NWO was and how, you know, that you just didn't know who to trust. You didn't know who was going to join next. And then him coming from the rafters, which is something we had never seen done before. We had never, you know, we just didn't see this kind of that this presentation. So that's probably my favorite, just from the story element of the week to week. What I remember feeling real time as a, you know, as a younger person tuning in, like, oh my god, like, what's Sting going to do tonight? And then I can remember going to WCW shows in that era, in that time period, and you're going and you're looking up in the rafters, waiting to see if you can try to spot them, or you know, when the spot's coming.
Yeah, we got in the chat here, Tutgraph saying Surfer Sting was cool, Crow Sting was the opus. Then we had Brian Reyes saying Eric Draven Sting, aka Crow Sting, is my favorite. We also had Max Feldman saying in TNA his Joker Sting was pretty cool also. So a big like range of stuff there from Sting. Something that was really cool, Justin, too, today. We'll just talk about it now since we're talking about Sting. I thought it was really classy and really cool of the way they acknowledged it on commentary tonight. Both the way Michael Cole said, you know, he acknowledged it, but then the way even Pat McAfee was like, yeah, it was an epic match. Like, I thought that was just really cool. And I hope, while I like it when wrestling companies fight, I kind of hope this leads to more of a, the better we all do, the better we all do situation, if that makes sense.
It was nice they mentioned it. You know, it was kind of appropriate the way they did it. They're not gonna go to you know, a stand up shot of Cole and Pat at the desk and say something about it, because they have no visual to show of it. They're not gonna show any imagery from an AEW show, nor could they legally. And they're not gonna make that big of a plot out of it. But they waited until the first match of which was Gunther and Dom, and just as that match, I believe, was even starting, they, you know, you know, just acknowledge it and gave it a moment. And yeah, it is classy. It is, you know, something different underneath the Triple H, which is, you know, we no longer have to only talk about this current present year and only WWE. You know, if you notice, ever since Triple H took over, Michael Cole is allowed to call back a lot more on history and a lot more on years and past things. He's able to say names of people, even if they're not still with the company. He said Sting tonight. He said Taz tonight. He said Jim Ross tonight. Yeah. If you're keeping score. So you're not going to get, I don't think it's going to get too much more, but it is just nice to like, just acknowledge that other things are there when appropriate. And Sting, Triple H is an old school guy. He worked Sting, at a Mania, and never mind how that might've gone, but Triple H still understands what Sting means to the business and can justify, okay, we can at least give 15 seconds on our programming to, say, you know, hey pal, and lift the metaphorical glass and say cheers, you know, good career.
Yeah, Jimmy, I think it's so cool that they did this. I don't know if you have any thoughts on them acknowledging some of the folks that were gone. I never expect that. I don't expect WWE to ever be like, yeah, what a great show on, you know, AEW this week or anything like that. But it was really cool that Pat McAfee said it was an epic match and it was an epic ending for the career. And I also think we can nitpick a lot of what happens in AEW, but with these legends, I think that AEW does a pretty good job of letting people end their career gracefully. And I think it's a cool thing that I think we should give them their flowers for letting someone like Sting have this exit that felt so great for him to have, as opposed to maybe what it could have been, just a, oh, he doesn't wrestle anymore kind of thing.
No, I think it was very nice touch, and I think it was very classy. And again, to Justin's point, I don't see them putting it up on the big Tron so that the crowd could start chanting for Sting, that sort of thing. Kind of like with Darby's situation with getting the AEW crowd to start chanting Cody. I don't think WWE wants to bring it that far, but at the same time, they do want to acknowledge someone who, again, like I said, doesn't only deserve it, but earn that respect. And I think they did it in a classy way. And they, like you said, Justin, they mentioned Taz, they mentioned JR, and even during the Andrade, Michael Cole was giving a little bit of history lesson about his CMLL career and that sort of stuff. So they are kind of changing a little bit of how they acknowledge superstars now. And I like that, because it's not like you just, oh, he's here now, and that's all you're going to remember. They're giving a little history, and they're acknowledging people who deserve to be.
Yeah, and to the Sting thing real quick, I thought also another thing, as we're talking about how WWE's handling this different than they might have in the past. Lex Luger, who a lot of fans may not realize is an employee of WWE. Lex is employed by WWE on their on the wellness side of things. And he revealed on Busted Open last week that WWE actually put out like a memo or policy to the guys saying like you just can't advertise that you are going to be there. It is a competitor. You can't be promoting on your social that you're going to be there, even if you're not obviously working a match, but we just can't have you advertising. But basically saying, you know, we're not going to stop you from being there to support a friend, but just don't advertise that I'm going to be there. And Lex had said it was nice to get some guidelines. It was just nice to get clarity of, okay, what can I do, rather than the whole I'm going to do it and then hope it doesn't ruffle feathers, or hope I don't have to ask for forgiveness later. And so, again, something that from what Lex was saying, because he's been employed by WWE for some number of years now, that it seems like it was something new, and he appreciated just getting that understanding of what he could and couldn't do.
Which, and by the way, is more than fair to say that you can do this stuff, but don't go promoting the other guys. If you work at Nike, for instance, like, you're allowed to wear Adidas, but they certainly don't want you going on social media saying, man, Adidas are the best shoes ever, right, you know? So clearly there's a reason. That makes total sense to me. Of course, Justin, you had mentioned how they ended the show. AEW now vacating the tag titles. It's been announced they're going to do a tournament. And Darby Allin also let everyone know that he's doing okay at the scrum. He survived that. Ooh, that fall. Real quick, just to kind of touch on this part. Any thoughts on Darby Allin, the fall, him being okay, and a tag match for the tag titles, or a tournament for the tag titles?
I'll just say it. Again, I thought the Sting would go out. I thought they would leave it up to Sting, and the Sting being old school to go out looking at the lights. I still think that maybe that's what he wanted to do, but I don't know. But, you know, and Darby had said he's gone. He leaves like March 27th. He's going to go climb Everest.
and jump off it.
You know, so I would have thought like, okay, well, if Sting's retiring and Darby's going, like just have them drop the titles. You can still have some whatever post-match. And then so that way Sting standing tall and confetti's falling, pyro's going off, and you can give a speech. I would just think help your booking. Get some heat. You know, let the Young Bucks forever be able to say we retired Sting. And or, I mean, does it have to be the Bucks, or can you find another tag team that's more associated as a heel tag team rather than a tag team that's going to go down in history whenever they retire as being more baby faces than the Bucks? All that being said, I mean, I just thought, winning and then all of a sudden saying, okay, now we're going to vacate the tag titles. AEW's done this before where they just vacate a title. You know, Joe just vacated the ROH title. Like, to me, it's like when you actively vacate when you're not injured and you're not whatever and you're just moving, like, to me, it just seems like you're just discarding the title. I just feel like the wins and losses are there for a reason. If for a company who keeps track of win-loss record like AEW does and has rankings, I would think it would be all the more significant criteria to have, you know, again, this is where I'm nitpicking. AEW fans are going to get all up in arms, but Sting is to go out forever undefeated in AEW. So I guess that's something also to tout.
Yeah, Jimmy, I want you to get your final thoughts on all this and the tag titles. I'm going to disagree with Justin, though. I get the booking side of it, but this just felt like a feel good. I think it was worth it. I feel like it was worth whatever happens to whatever lineage and heat and everything like that. And I don't know. I liked it. I felt too good about it. And I still feel too good about it for me to want to change anything. But what say you?
I just, I'm not a big fan of the tournament aspect of it. I like the fact that he went out on top. Of course, me and my fantasy booking brain, I would have liked to have seen maybe Sting take his title, put it on Darby's shoulders and give him that, you know, now you're representing kind of thing. And instead of vacating the titles, maybe they do an angle on Wednesday night where the Bucks come out and say, hey, those are tag team titles. You can't handle those alone. You need a partner. And guess what? We're going to appoint one for you. Instead of him getting to choose a partner or something along those lines to further that storyline and get more heat on the Bucks. Like they could, you know, depending on who they choose as his partner, something to further the story, because just vacating him, and I hate to put it this way, it just sounds lazy. Like, you know, we're going to do another tournament.
It would have been kind of a cool idea, Jimmy, if, yeah, on Wednesday they said, we're going to give you a tag team partner, and they give him like Brandon Cutler, their old buddy, who kind of has a Mean Street Posse level of vibe to him, where not a threat in the ring, going to help out his buddies, the Young Bucks, and then you still get that moment later. I agree. I feel like they do a ton of tournaments. I feel like there's a lot of tournaments in general in pro wrestling these days. Right. But
almost as many as the roll-up finish.
Yeah, so there's a lot of tournaments lately, but I don't know. I feel if I'm a betting man, I got a feeling FTR win that tournament, and we all forget that they got smoked by the Blackpool Combat Club over the past month. I do want to talk about another piece of news that dropped today, though. We're going to shift back over to WWE. This is a WWE after show, by the way. Kind of the news that everyone was talking about. We have our first Hall of Fame inductee, and it's Paul Heyman. This one, Jimmy, I think is just a slam dunk. I think it's in Philly. I think he's a Hall of Fame guy. I'm happy about this completely. I guess I want your thoughts on Paul. I want your thoughts on the fact that he was the first announced, the headliner, and that he was the first announced as a manager or a GM or a non-wrestler, I should say. And he clearly has a lot of time left on TV as opposed to the old days where the people announced were pretty much done.
No, that's the interesting part, because he isn't done. He's still very visible on television, especially in that Bloodline storyline. But it is a no-brainer. Paul Heyman has brought to the wrestling business so much from his creative standpoint, from the ECW, the founder and creator of ECW. And because of what ECW brought to the table, that was the reason WWE made that left turn and that switch to the Attitude Era. That's what made them do it, because they saw that there was something there in ECW. And from a personal standpoint, getting to work with him, because when he was like head of creative on SmackDown, he was so easy to get along with. He had such passion. Everything he dove into everything head first. You know, everybody talks about the old boss being 24/7. Paul's the same way. He's got that passion, and he's also open to listening and just taking everything in and being able to take all that feedback that he gets from everybody and turn it into magic. And he did that a lot. And, you know, not to make this about me at all, but even I mentioned something to him one day, just off the cuff. And he said, just off the cuff, he says back to me, "Why aren't you in our meetings?" You know what I mean? And that's the way he was. He took advice from everybody. At the same time, it was his creative genius that brought him to the forefront and made him the man who he is. And again, as far as managers go, one of the best talkers ever. There's very few people who could get on the mic like him. And he gets people over. And, you know, congrats to him.
Yeah, Justin, thoughts on Paul Heyman? I personally put him as the best mic guy of all time, because I feel like not only is he great, but he sells me on matches as opposed to just funny one-liners and things like that. Like, he'll, every time he's on the microphone, he sells me on buying a ticket. And he's done it for decades, which is incredible. And he's done it from every position, whether it be manager,
right,
commentary, promoter, whatever the case is. Your thoughts on Paul Heyman, and who do you think should induct him?
Well, I'll get to the induction in a second. Yeah, you're right. I don't think I could argue with you on that one, Jack. I don't think anybody could top him on the mic. And you're right. The fact that he's able to do it and you know, put him in the commentary table where you have certain parameters you have to follow there. Put him on the mic as a manager, put him on the mic as the authority figure, put him on the mic as the renegade underground promoter. I mean, he can do it all. For a second, to make it about myself, of my personal experience with him, I obviously never worked with him to like Jimmy would have, you know, in SmackDown, but I grew up obviously watching Paul and all the different iterations that he had. And when I started in the wrestling internet world, God, 15 years ago, with WrestleZone.com at the time. At that time, the company that owned that site, the company that owned WrestleZone, owned a bunch of sites. One of the other sites they owned was Heyman's Heyman Hustle site. So I never had to directly, I never got to directly work with Paul on any projects in that time period, but the 6 degrees of separation was very close. I'll just say that in terms of communications, this and that. And I heard a lot of stories and saw a lot of things with him. And I was like, wow, this guy really is as crazy and brilliant as I always thought that he was, just sitting from a fan perspective. And then, you know, later we get to interview him and this and that and what have you. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. And yeah, it's great that he's not done. It's great that he's going to get inducted in the Hall of Fame on Friday, and he's going to be right back to work Saturday and Sunday with the Bloodline and for then on. And in terms of who inducts him, you know, Bully Ray and I were going back and forth on Twitter earlier tonight about this. You know, I think obviously you're in Philly, so an ECW original, of course, makes sense if it was Bully or Dreamer. You know, but I think if you're not going to go that route, Hall of Fame is just like any other thing WWE does. It's an attraction. It's a card you're putting together. You're trying to get people to tune in. You're trying to get people to buy tickets. So I would go with a guy who's an attraction, who you have in-house, who you're not going to be able to promote to do anything else, and that's CM Punk. CM Punk's famously a Paul Heyman guy. You can't advertise CM Punk to do any bumping at Mania. He's not going to be, you know, as far as, you know, health-wise. So I would have him, you know, and of course he's a great talker himself. So if you have Heyman who's going to deliver one hell of an acceptance speech, you'll want to try to have somebody who can at least have a little bit of microphone chops themselves to induct him and to lead him out on the stage. And I think Punk could be up to that task. So I would go with CM Punk personally.
I think that I would agree with you on that. I think CM mm-hmm. Punk would be the guy. And one of the reasons I think that for all the obvious reasons, like he's a great talker. He's as you mentioned, he'll sell a ticket himself just being there. But also the thing about Paul Heyman that I've seen, I've never met him, but just from what I can tell is he's definitely someone who's like in the moment of what's going on in the world right now. He's one of those guys that if you asked him who he thinks the greatest wrestler of all time is, he's going to say Roman Reigns, because that's what's going on right now. He's not one of those guys that can be like, well, you know, back in 20 years ago, this was the person or anything like that. He's going to try to sell and promote what's going on now. And that's where CM Punk comes in. And so, but I think there's a lot of people, like if it was the Dudley Boys or if it was Tommy Dreamer, I think they'd be fantastic as a fan. But I think Paul Heyman would say, but what are we doing now? I want to promote now. I can't promote Tommy Dreamer. I can't promote the Dudley Boys, but I can promote CM Punk and what he's doing. And we can build something off that. That's just how he always seems to me whenever I've seen him talk in any way, in any place. And I got the chance to interview him one time as part of a group, MacMania, on The Ringer a while back, and he was incredible to talk to. And again, we were a small show, you know, a lot of people didn't know who we were, but he still gave us the time, which meant the world to me. But Jimmy, who any guesses for you on who might induct him?
It's a tough one. I do like the CM Punk. You know, that like you said, Justin, he's great on the microphone, and he could really do it in justice. Let's put it that way. Bully would be a great choice too. You know, mm-hmm. I think Bully, you know, he's when he lights a fire, somebody lights a fire under his butt, you know, Bully can go. And having them out there, Tommy Dreamer's a good choice as well. Any ECW original, as long as it's not Sabu, because I don't picture him being great on the mic, but yeah, CM Punk seems the most natural. And I saw the little Twitter exchange you had with Bully mm-hmm. today, and he mentioned the name Austin, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. a good name, which would work well. But if he were to make an appearance at either night one or night two of WrestleMania, that would take away from that glass shattering that you hear if he were to appear. And that would make the place erupt. And, you know, that's an open-air stadium in Philly. They're going to hear it all the way to Delaware. I mean, like that's how big that pop would be. So, you know,
and that was my counter to Bully. I mean, Austin's my number one guy, but if Austin is going to appear unadvertised as a surprise night one or night two, which is very possible because obviously he's in shape. If the mm-hmm. Rock's back out there, you never know. Even if he doesn't do any run in or anything involved with the Rock, much like they did 10 years ago for Mania 30. We saw promos of Austin and Hogan, and they're all out there. So I don't take that off the table. And you're right. If you already have him advertised to appear inside of an arena Friday night for Hall of Fame, and everybody knows he's there that weekend, it lessens the shock value of whatever he would do in the next two nights. And that was my exact counter to Bully. And so, you know,
yeah, like you said, people are going to expect it. Okay, when is he going to come out? When are we going to hear the glass shatter? As opposed to popping it and just, you know, as a surprise and have the place explode.
You guys need to understand, if I get a Rock Austin stare down at Mania, my soul will leave my body for an unknown period of time because I will be so, so excited as a wrestling fan. It'll just like,
I mean, look, think about it, Jack. We're celebrating. We're celebrating 40 years of WrestleMania. And in terms of who and what is realistic and appropriate, Rock and Austin headlined 3 Manias. I mean, that's, you know, those three headlined 3 Manias and it was 15, 17, and 19. So, I mean, and that short of a time period, and oh, by the way, the business got bigger each time. I mean, you know, that, so if there, I mean, you know, that would be very appropriate at Mania 40 to have some type of crossing of paths. I'm not saying they have to start to come to blows. Maybe they end up on the same side, but that would be very appropriate to see them in the same frame at some point as we're celebrating 40 years, that they were a huge part of the 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, I mean, no one will see it because they'll be looking at the ring, but I will levitate 3 feet off the ground if this happens and start ascending into the sky. Mm-hmm. Once that happens, but
you'll be hanging out with the WrestleMania sign.
Yes. And then when it's over, I'll just fall down to the ground and be back in it.
And pull a Darby Allin. Don't sell it. Sorry. Sorry.
He sold that one.
No, yeah, he had to.
That whether he liked it or not, he was out for a bit.
Has there really been a debate today about whether that was real glass or not?
Apparently there was. I saw people going, that was real glass. No, it was candy glass. Whatever. I don't know what it was.
I mean, it looked like it broke like real glass.
Yeah.
He was bleeding like crazy. And let's be honest. The glass is almost the least of my issues with that fall. I mean, if it's fake glass, we're like, oh, well, then it wasn't so bad. Are you kidding me? Did you see how high he was? And he just fell like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
You almost wish it was like when Kurt Angle tried to Shane over his head. And the first time he tried it, he hit the glass and it didn't break. And you could see the anger in Kurt's face when he said, oh no, he's going through the glass the second time he did it.
I fear twisting my ankle just hopping off the ring apron, let alone jumping off of that off of a ladder onto the outside of falling on my back. Oh my goodness.
And that's the thing people don't understand is you can just jumping off the apron, twist an ankle, you know, one little twitch of the knee, something can go on it. What is it, 3 feet, 4 feet?
Ask Adam Cole.
Exactly.
He was just jumping off of the elevated ramp and he,
right.
You know,
So anything can happen. And then you see guys like, oh man, do you remember the bump Orange Cassidy took in the corner with Roddy? I look at that and I go, he should not ever get up, let alone that scares me, man. That scares me.
Well, let's get into this episode of Monday Night Raw. I want to talk about all the stuff that happened here. And as always, I just want to say thank you to everyone for joining us again. Like, comment, share, subscribe. Tyler D, The Answer, Sonny Sitar, Tut Graff, Adam Staples, Mike Rouse, No Way. We got a ton of people in here today. We're a little late in the show, so I can't go through everyone. But I want you to know you're all very appreciated. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review. All that good stuff. And we got a couple super chats in here, and this is the place where we're going to talk about them. We start the show with Cody Rhodes coming out, and he explains everything that happened between him and The Rock, then brings out Seth Rollins, and they talk about teaming together. On night one, Rollins dares The Rock to try to take the title from him, mocks The Rock in general. Eventually, though, it's basically a big sales pitch for tuning in to SmackDown to find out more information. Jimmy, I want to start with you, just kind of your overall thoughts on the beginning of how the show started, and Tyler D's comments, who says Cody and Seth are not believable. They're like two JV football players, weaker, far less charisma. Who cares about Roman Reigns versus Cody? The match is Cody versus The Rock.
Well, apparently he's not a Cody crybaby, let's put it that way. And I think they do have charisma, and they're good on the mic, and they showed it again tonight. It's just that it didn't further anything. I mean, everybody's expecting it to be a tag match on night one, and we're going to get the big announcement on SmackDown this Friday, but I'm not 100% convinced that that's what's going to happen, because mm-hmm. it almost feels like they're leading towards a little bit of a confrontation between Cody and Seth. But also what we saw on Friday night on SmackDown, there was a little bit of tension between Rock and Roman as well. So it could be a double swerve. Maybe Cody comes out on Friday night and says, hey, you know what? You want to make this a tag match with the stipulation that if we win, it's one-on-one with me and Roman, no bloodline interference. But if you guys win, it's bloodline rules, whatever that may be. I don't know if it's anything like Freebird rules, but what if Cody says, well, if you're not man enough to face me one-on-one, Rock, you claim to be, you know, this superstar that you are, we will face you in a tag match, but somewhere down the line, you and I have to face each other one-on-one at some point, or something along those lines. But call out The Rock for not wanting to face him one-on-one. Because if they do have this tag match, now you got Cody, Seth, and Roman all working two nights, as opposed to making Cody special mm-hmm. by being the only guy to work both nights and main event both nights.
Well, Justin, that was my question to you, is right now, the way this is set up, assuming it goes as it looks like it's going, we don't even have really an option for Rock competing on night two. Because if they win, it sounds like the rules of the match are different, but The Rock isn't in a match. So we would never actually even get a singles Rock match the way this is lined up. So what are your thoughts on how this is coming about? And also Honey Bun's comment, super chat, Cody and Seth are the modern mega powers.
I mean, until it's official, it's not official. So to what Jimmy was saying, I am still hoping that there is some type of a bit of a swerve and this results in Cody versus Rock night one. Mm-hmm. I don't want a tag match. To what Jimmy said, I don't want three of them all working double duty. I think it does make it more significant if Cody's the one who main events in both nights and has to go through Rock and then Roman straight up one-on-one. I think that's more of what the people want to see. I think they're cheering Seth because Seth's on the same side as lovable Cody Rhodes, and they're also cheering Seth kind of like, oh, well, he's trying to be there to support. But the other thing, too, is I get in the stipulations. Like, first of all, when you look at the stipulations have no.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Will benefit directly to Seth Rollins. The mm-hmm. stipulations entirely affect Cody in his next night. Now, yes, they've tried to bridge the gap of saying how Seth cares about Cody beating Roman, dethroning Roman, taking Roman off of his power throne because it's dangerous and this and that. So, like, I get that that's Seth's cause in this. That's his fight. is that it's dangerous if the bloodline gains any more power. But it's still a bit of a stretch for me. And oh, by the way, in all of it, you're just further shoving down Seth's title and Drew McIntyre's challenge of it, which Drew is kind of saying in the storyline. But it's true. You're further, like, so I just, I hope it results in the one-on-one. If I'm a betting man, it probably doesn't. It's probably the tag match probably gets officially made or a contract gets signed or whatever on SmackDown. And I'm sure it'll be fun, but I don't that's not the best option.
No, sorry to interject here, Jack. No, I totally agree with that. I prefer the one-on-one because you can get so much more out of it. And I understand the idea of maybe the tag matches to help protect Rock in this situation because he hasn't been in the ring. Yes, you can train in a ring for so, but unless you get the reps in actual matches, it's not the same thing. And
but this, Jimmy, I won't buy that because they were going into this Mania season planning to have him versus Roman straight up.
Right. No, I get that point. But again, here goes Captain Fantasy Booker over here, the old man who thinks he can do this sort of thing. What if they do make it a singles match on night one? And despite the attempted interference of the bloodline, Cody prevails. Then on night two, you have your opening match, which whatever it is going to be something to set the tone. And then you just show a backstage vignette, a little video of the bloodline in the locker room. And Rock turns to Roman and says, listen, you need to do this tonight. You need to take this guy out for the honor of our family, for the bloodline. You are the head of the table. You need to do this tonight. His story ends tonight. And then Roman gets up, and as he walks by, is about to walk by, looks at Rock and says, right, I'll do what you couldn't get done last night. And as he walks by, just a little nudge, brush, and Rock takes those sunglasses off and gives a look. And I don't know, set the tone there.
Yeah, I agree. I think just in general, one-on-one matches have more gravitas to them in most cases, especially like this. And I think seeing The Rock in a tag match just feels like one foot in, one foot out with The Rock's return. I don't think we need a massive, great match, especially with guys like Cody and Roman or Seth involved. They're all guys who can pace things out. So if they need to slow down or pick up or do whatever, I'm sure it'll be fine in that case. But the tag match, I don't know. I'll be excited when I'm watching it. I just know myself I'll be into it. But like going into it, it just doesn't, I don't know. It feels like
Seth's the fourth wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. And
he's a fourth wheel for a tricycle. You don't need him.
Absolutely. And I also don't want to see a triple threat between the three either. You know, like I feel like I would much rather, I know it's very, Daniel Bryan, but I'd much rather Cody just goes through two people in one night to get the win to get there as opposed to this thing. And Justin, I guess the last thing on this I want to talk about before we get into the main event, as we talk about the main event is I feel like there's a lot of confusion with how they got there here. Maybe they changed their mind. Do you feel like, I feel like they're kind of over explaining themselves at this point. Like I get that they've changed their mind and they're trying to find logic to it. But at the same time, I feel like we've already said, okay, I get it. Okay. We're on board. This is where we're going. But I feel like they keep trying to add all this new backstory to it where I think we're already on board. You don't need to explain Cody giving The Rock the shot anymore. Like we've moved on.
Well, obviously they called audible. So they're trying to overcompensate maybe in some ways in terms of like, okay, well they've blown up what they were going to do. Apparently in mid January, the plan was Rock versus Roman, Rollins versus Punk. Cody probably gets an injury angle and is written off of, that's probably what the plan was, right? For best we could tell. And then Punk is injured, the entire wrestling WWE universe revolts against The Rock. So, I get it. They're trying to now just give as much color to it. The stipulation's a great thing. The stipulation about, bloodline rules or bloodlines banned, that's great. That makes a lot of sense because Seth has even said to Cody, look, you know what happened last year. You got screwed because of the numbers gained in the bloodline. That's a great stipulation. That's a great make this as tall of a hill as possible that or mountain rather that Cody's got to climb that weekend. But it can be done one-on-one with he and Rock. And if there was any doubt of, okay, what can The Rock do with Cody? You know, Cody's in his prime out there wrestling four nights a week. What can The Rock do? You know, Rock and Roman can have a different type of match. They can do a lot of, you know, but maybe, okay, oh, we need Rock to do a little bit more one-on-one with Cody. You can still have the goo goo gaga of having the other Bloodline members and having Jay and having, you know, Seth could still have a run-in. Like, you could still have other members of this entire story be present. But for the actual match participant, the one-on-one is just a better way to go. It's a much better selling point, and it's a much more logical selling point. Seth still seems out of place, and it's like, oh, by the way, Seth's also got to defend his title against Drew. It's just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was one little thing. Sorry, yeah. Jack, but there was a little thing in with Seth's promo in when he was near the end of it. He almost did that. You know how Rock acknowledges this way. And he kind of looked at it and kind of, you know, took it back. You know what I mean? So, again, little seeds planted that get you guessing. And that's what I like about this. It has you thinking, oh, it can go this way. It can go that way. We don't know. That's the beauty of it.
My buddy Drew Springsteen on Twitter suggested maybe The Rock, as the tension starts to rise at Mania, with and however it all is, The Rock holds up this. And it's a symbol for Solo to take that spike, and Solo turns on Roman.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I thought it was more like an L, like loser, and then or pointing at like.
That's why I thought it was fun that Juice had that. He had a different interpretation. Wanted to give him a shout out. Follow him on Twitter at Juicy Steen.
Great name, by the way. Yeah. But I like that idea. That'd be interesting to see, and also make Solo an even bigger star. But Jimmy, I want to talk to you about the main event. Drew McIntyre, Jey Uso. Of course, there's an interference at the end that leads to Drew McIntyre getting the win. And the Bloodline is there setting up more for Jey versus Jimmy. Solo's there, gets chased off. Drew ends by saying, like, look, you're too distracted, Seth Rollins. You need to focus on this. Is there a way to get Seth Rollins out of the Bloodline mess and just have him focus on the world title at this point? Or is that ship sailed? Like, he can't, you know what I mean? Like, he can't pull away from the Bloodline stuff at this point. Can he?
He can, because Drew can make him. Drew can push those buttons, and he's doing it so well right now with what he's saying. And it's, you know, he does that thing where he says he speaks the truth. And what good heels do is they do speak the truth, but they do it in such a POS manner that you just want to hate him. And if he could draw Seth away from that, but it looks like we're talking about the tag match. If it's going to a tag match, then I don't know how you drag him away from that. And there was a point tonight where they did advertise co-main event for Sunday is Drew and Seth, night two. So that, again, makes me think, are they going to do this on Sunday? That's almost like giving away that it is going to be a tag match. I don't know. I just, it's trying to do too much. And I don't know if they can, like you said, get Seth away from that Bloodline storyline and his interactions with all that's going on.
If they do Drew versus Seth on night two, which would of course be the same night as Cody Roman, you have to put Seth and Drew as the opening match. Have that as far away as possible, especially if Drew wins. You cannot bury his moment 3.5 hours into the show right before the Cody Roman. That needs to be kick the show off. Let him have his if that's what ends up being.
That's a death spot right before that main event. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Of course, this week, Raw was really all about the Intercontinental Championship and Judgment Day and Imperium. And so I want to start. Dom Mysterio takes on Gunther, and Dom gets a little bit of offense in, but for the most part, Gunther just demolishes him. And now it looks like we're going to have a gauntlet match for the contender at WrestleMania. It's going to be Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura, Ricochet, Bronson Reed, JD McDonagh, and Chad Gable. Justin, I saw you making the faces. Gunther, did Dom owe Gunther some money here? What is this all about?
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Gunther, as you guys all know. Dom sold like an insurance salesman that was hard up on commission. Tremendous work by Dom. A fun match. A really fun match. Very interesting match, though. And we saw this quite a bit tonight, especially as it relates to Judgment Day Imperium. There's this weird, like, they're all in shades of gray. Like, Gunther was getting cheered because Dom is the ultimate heel. It's great. And then later we got Judgment Day in a tag match against the other two of Imperium. And at one point there was a Finn Balor chant. Like, so I'm really curious about exactly who is, like, you know, who are we who are we cheering here? Who's a heel? Who's a face? You know, I'm glad that this back to the IC title. I'm glad that the six person earning their way. I'm glad that it's actually being done on Raw. I've seen some people say, "Oh, this is a missed opportunity to, you know, have some kind of like, excuse me, ladder match or gauntlet match at Mania." No. I just did the big thing earlier about Revolution last night at AEW. Not everybody makes the cut. Not everybody makes a show. I like the fact we are going to determine the challenger next week on Raw, and that's that. And you know what? Who is it? Chad Gable cut a pretty personal promo again, so he makes me think like he's the front runner. But I don't think Gunther loses this title at Mania. I don't think he should.
It's a fair point, especially if we got Seth and Drew, which feels like a title change, Cody and Reigns, which feels like a title change. Jimmy, Dom and Gunther, as Justin alluded to, crowd seemed split, and of course later we had that tag team match. It felt like they were trying to position on commentary Imperium as the faces, but the crowd was clearly behind Balor. Is this a situation? I know that in some cases you've said in the past that like you like to know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Is this a case where we don't know who the good guys are and the bad guys are? Or is this a case, are they trying to turn Imperium face here? Because it felt like we were supposed to be rooting for Imperium tonight.
It's a weird way they did it tonight. Obviously with Dom, who gets mega heat against Gunther, and just really quickly, Gunther does lay his stuff in, and boy, you can even feel it in the crowd. He threw a punch on Dom, and Dom sold it so well. Even the crowd went, ooh. They all 14,000 people went, ooh. And that's what old school wrestling is, selling and making people believe. And as far as who is babyface, who is healed, we did see a lot of that tonight, the shades of gray, walking the line. But the interesting thing I found in the tag match with Imperium versus Finn and Priest, usually in WWE, the baby faces are, if you're watching from the hard camera, upper left side. And that's where Judgment Day was. Imperium was in the bottom right corner, which is usually where the heels are positioned on television. So if they were trying to make Imperium feel like the baby faces in this one, I'm just curious because that's usually the position that they put them in. So maybe they were subtly trying to make Judgment Day the baby faces in this one, or get them to at least get the positive reaction from the crowd tonight, because that's what it seemed to be happening. Like you said, Finn was getting cheered and they were chanting for him and stuff. So it was the ring where they were positioned in the ring in the tag match that made me think maybe it is Judgment Day that they want to see if they get that babyface reaction.
But back to Gunther, I mean, he you know, and again, we think he was supposed to have his Mania match against Lesnar. That's not going to happen. There was a moment where the crowd was really cheering Gunther for all of the just brutal offense he gave Dom. And yes, I know Dom's like the heel of all heels in the company, but like there was a moment where I got this feeling of like what the crowd has kind of done with Brock in the last couple of years, where Brock has just become just appreciated and respected for his insane physical dominance, to where that's kind of become a babyface thing. Brock's kind of the same character, heel or face. The only difference is Paul Heyman introducing him or not. That's kind of really the only difference. But it's like the last few years, Brock's been appreciated for just his dominance. That's kind of what I felt at a moment tonight with Gunther, was like, ooh, are we kind of like swinging the other way to where like we're gonna allow Gunther to go against heels and just be cheered for his just absolute you know, control of this IC title and this record-setting run. I don't know. And the fact that we're not going to get Gunther versus a Brock, it just makes me wonder. I think he might go in and leave Mania and just not lose. And why, I mean, if you don't have the person ready, do you think, don't force it. Let the run keep going, yeah. Especially if the fans are starting to get onto a Gunther bandwagon. Keep that baby rolling.
And also, we saw a different demeanor from him in the backstage interview afterwards. There was more of a quiet confidence in him as opposed to that, oh, you know, that mm-hmm. tough guy attitude. There was a comfort zone that he mm-hmm. was in before Chad Gable came in and gave that passionate promo and to him. But it's kind of conflicting because Gunther has had problems with his Imperium stablemates in the past, and maybe there will be a split coming in the future from them.
Well, Sammy is one of the guys. We saw the promo from Chad Gable, which felt like a I'm going to win this thing promo. But Sami Zayn also had a promo in a similar manner, led to a match with Ivar. Basically, this was Sami Zayn overcoming the big guy, gets the win, then gets crushed by Bronson Reed. There was a lot of talk about antlers during this one. Jimmy, I want to go to you for this one. I was very confused by this because Ivar is supposed to be a bad guy here, but it was a very lovable thing Valhalla did. And then it felt a little bit like this was one of those things where all for the first half of the match, all of the attention was on Michael Cole wearing antlers instead of what was supposed to be going on in the ring. It was a very fun moment, and I loved it. I don't care, but I'm trying to ask conversational questions to pry here. Do you think that was a bad move? Do you think they've taken some of the threat from Valhalla and Ivar with this whole antler thing?
I don't think they took the threat away. I think it took away from the match because the audience was distracted by it. You even saw Michael Cole take out his phone and taking selfies of himself with the antlers on and stuff like that. So it felt like the focus of the match was, at the beginning at least, was the antlers placed on Michael Cole's head instead of Ivar versus Sami Zayn. And that's what mm-hmm. the focus should be on.
Yeah. Like I said, I loved it, but I got to ask provocative questions.
Don't get me wrong. It was a fun moment, but I just didn't think it was the time for it. Maybe before the match starts. Okay. But once the match starts, it's down to business.
Yeah. Justin, any thoughts on this one?
No, I mean, like Jimmy, like you guys said, it was a very fun moment and the crowd's chanting Michael Cole, you know, Pat's calling him an a-hole. again, this goes earlier. We're talking about Michael Cole dropping names of people that he wouldn't normally be able to drop names of. This is another example. He's not being micromanaged. He's allowed to have some fun. Mm-hmm. You know, he's calling the match with the antlers on. So he's holding just this microphone to his mouth. So he doesn't have the headset on, which that means he can't get any cues directly from anybody. Right. Jimmy can attest to this because he worked there. Once upon a time, if Michael Cole would have dared done that, that would have been a huge problem. If cues couldn't go directly to him and cues would have had to been relayed from somebody else to him, that would have been a problem. But times have changed, mostly for the better. So it's nice that he had fun. It was a feel-good moment. The crowd had fun. I cheered on it. It was cool. It did take away at the start. This crowd started to chant Michael, and before Ivar and Sammy even did the collar and elbow tie-up, they paused because they saw the crowd going. So
smart
move. They had to wait. I personally wasn't as bothered by it because I thought it was very predictable that Sammy's going to win this.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was nice to have this fun moment. It is weird, like you said, Jack, Valhalla and them are supposed to be dangerous, but it was fun. It was fun, but I will say this. If a little part of Sammy and Ivar were a little, I get it. Because you're out there trying to do this match. Sammy's got the story, trying to get to Mania. Ivar's trying to stop him. We had the promo backstage. So I get it of like, you know, and again, Jimmy can attest, if you're the referee, if you're the announcer, you don't want to make it about yourself if it's not supposed to be.
Right.
If the storyline's not calling for you to be a pivotal part because of your refereeing or because of your commentating, you don't want to steal the boys. You know, so I get that Sammy and I could hear Michael Cole, though, after a moment or two of entertaining with Pat, Cole tried to get back on. He said, all right, we got a great match here. And he tried to, like, mm-hmm. reset it and get things back on track. You know, it's a fine line to walk, but hopefully all is well. It was fun for the viewer to watch.
Yeah, and at the end, I feel like wrestling, we always say, is those moments. That was a fun moment. So whatever, it was right. Fine. Like you said, Justin, it wasn't like this wasn't, you know, Cody versus Roman or something right, at WrestleMania. Right. It was, we kind of knew where this was going. We had Becky Lynch versus Nia Jax. And going into this one, I was a little worried because I was thinking this could be a pay-per-view match. These guys are like, have a great history, but it ends with Liv Morgan getting involved and costing Becky the match as a payback for what happened the previous week. Nia Jax ends up squashing both of them. Later, Becky and Liv getting into an argument, and they're going to have a fight about it next week. Jimmy, this is a fun little side quest for these characters. Why we go to WrestleMania instead of just dueling promos between champion and challenger.
No, it is. It adds a different layer. It adds different women to the mix. And I'm not a big fan of saying, okay, we're going to have a three-way match now because mm-hmm. of this situation. But in this case, I can be okay with it because Nia Jax looks like a legitimate threat. When you talk about believable threats to all the women in the women's division, it looks like she could take them all out. Nia mm-hmm. Jax is it. So if she were to be inserted into the mix, I would be okay with that. It also helps protect her in a sense, depending on who, I believe that Rhea Ripley is going to come out of WrestleMania as still the champ.
As she should.
I believe so because, strap the rocket to her for the women's division because it's there, you know, and there's some layers here that and ways out where you can protect certain other talents. And I'm okay if it turns out to be a three-way. And Liv being inserted in the mix here, I don't know if she's the third participant for this because for me, if she is, then she's ends up being the fall person and I don't want to see that. But with Nia, if she was the one to become the so-called quote-unquote fall person, then it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because she is so dominant.
I mean, Justin, in that case, I'm actually thinking more four-way or it pairs off with Liv versus Nia eventually and Becky versus Ripley. What are your thoughts on how this is unfolding for us?
Well, I don't think that they're going. I think it's going to remain a straight up one on one, Nia or Rhea and Becky. I think that's going to be the sell on the marquee. But I like that, you know, Liv was mad last week, got her stuff interrupted. I like the fact that she didn't just get walked on over and she got a little revenge tonight and interrupted tonight. I thought that's just good for her. It's good for her character. She can still be a face, but if you're a face, you don't have to be a pushover, you know, like. So I like that. I like the way they did tonight. Nia, look, and again, I say it all the time with Nia. I don't want to hear any of your outsmarting terminology of what kind of heat she does or doesn't have and this and that. Nia, she is a heel. She does her job. And right now in a women's division that is just stacked with baby faces. That women's division has so many baby faces and has so few credible heels that the crowd really cares about. I'm sorry, Shayna. I'm sorry. Like, there's a lot of heels that the crowd's just, you know, even the Kabuki Warrior. Like, it's just Nia is a very significant heel right now. And that makes her, that elevates her importance because you have all these faces which great. It's great to have faces, but Nia's, that makes her that much more important. So I hope that, I don't think Nia is going to be in a title match at Mania, but I hope that she gets. You know, I hope she gets a good match at Mania that has something behind it. I keep thinking, I know we saw her appear on SmackDown last week. I keep thinking Nia versus Jade Cargill is the perfect Mania match there for what that could serve. And that could still materialize. We have a month, but Nia is a great asset right now to this women's division. I'll say that.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people that we're not supposed to like in the women's division, we all like the Kabuki Warriors. Yeah, we're supposed to boo them, but who's not a fan of the Kabuki Warriors, you know, like they're great. And so we saw a bit of that actually with the tag team division. As you mentioned, Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark took on Katana Chance and Caden Carter. There we know who to boo and who to cheer for. But next week we're getting Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark versus the Kabuki Warriors, which again is a little bit of a who's the good guy, who's the bad guy here. That led to backstage comments of some people trying to figure out what they're going to do with their tag teams. I think it was a lot of who's going to be good guys and who's going to be bad guys here. I feel like there's some reset there, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, again, I credit to them for trying to do more. I mean, they have, again, you have a ton of women, female talent. Credit to them to trying to have more than just the story of who's the title holder. That's great. Trying to have more stories. I'm all for that. Unfortunately, I don't feel like the audience as a whole cares too much about. They're not grabbing hold too much on some of these other secondary feuds. We'll try to keep giving it time, and the only way they can grab hold of it is to give it opportunity and time. But me personally, I found myself very disengaged at this point.
Yeah. Jimmy, what's your thoughts on the women's tag team division? It feels like they've got a lot of teams, and it feels like when I look at the members of the teams, they're good members. Like it on paper, if I was drawing this up, they seemed like a good division. But to Justin's point, I don't know if I'm necessarily feeling like super pumped about some of the potential matchups either. What do you think of the division, and do you have any ideas of what they could do to sort of spice this division up?
No, I agree with both your guys' sentiments on this. I give them credit for trying to get us interested and showing these women on television and showing that they're definitely showing how deep the roster is, but they need to do more. What that is, put my finger on it, exactly what they could do. Put them
tournament.
Yeah.
No.
There you go. That's the easy out again. Let's have a tournament, that sort of thing. You know, it's hard to put my finger on what they could do other than just put them out there and let's see who the crowd cheers for. And that's what the sentiment, it felt like tonight, that's what a lot of it was. It felt like the story of the night, not just for the women, but for throughout the night. Let's put two combatants out there and both in that shade of gray. And let's see who they start to cheer for. It was almost like a test.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you felt the same way. It was almost like, let's test the waters and see who they actually want to cheer.
Yeah.
But to the question of what they can do to actually elevate and make people more engaged and interested, we have to feel more of the personas of these women, not just have them go out and say, we want the championships. We want the championships and stuff like that. We need to get engaged like they do with, in the men's division. We talk about this all the time. You get engaged in the characters and the personas more than you do the matches. We want to know more about the personalities. Maybe that could help.
I mean, that's a good point, because as I'm looking at some of the names here, like I know Tegan Knox is a great wrestler. I couldn't tell you what her personality is. Or same with Indy Hartwell. I know her from NXT, but on the main roster, I couldn't really tell you who she is as a character to someone who hasn't watched wrestling. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that where, yeah, you could kind of figure some of those things out. As we wrap up here, we can kind of go into final thoughts. Of course, Justin, I'll go to you. Any final thoughts? Of course, there's Andrade versus Apollo Crews in his debut match. R-Truth was also playing the video game tonight. Final thoughts and any thoughts on those segments? And of course, where can we find you online?
Andrade's entrance, his presentation looks good. I'll be curious once we get post-Mania into the fresh WWE calendar, what they got lined up for him. It's interesting they keep having him briefly cross paths backstage with Dom. Curious what that's going to lead to. Overall, it was a Raw that, it's doing what it has to do. We're a month away from Mania, right? We're a month out. So, we're just moving all the pieces in place. I'm definitely tuning in Friday for SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Overall, you can find me online at Justin Labar on Twitter. Trying to get even more. I've had Instagram for years. I'm trying to get more active, whether it's posting videos from Busted Open or whatever. Just trying to, as I posted something tonight of myself and Pat McAfee together, trying to do more. So follow me across there. You can find me here on Monday nights with Triple J. And then you can find me Friday mornings on Busted Open with myself, Dave LaGreca, and Thunder Rosa. Spar with Labar on Busted Open, Sirius XM on the app or on channel 156. And then I get the entire show on Sunday. They give us the entire 3 hours to have control of the place, myself and Jonathan Hood, a tremendous wrestling voice and mind. We have a great time on the Sunday show. This past week, we had the legendary journalist and historian Bill After to talk about Sting. Bill had some great personal stories about Sting befriending Bill's son, some nice gesture Sting had. Like, I mean, it was just some great stuff. And it's on social media, so you can check out the clips or hit me up and I'll share it with you. We have that. We have our match of the week. We have our busted open confessionals. My confession, just to give you a taste of what confessionals are like. It's things you've never told anybody about your wrestling fandom or mistakes or whatever. My confession this past week, gentlemen, was for I knew who I watched Yokozuna in 1993 when the Rumble. I watched him in 94 being Undertaker in a casket match. I watched Yokozuna on WWE TV. It was some years later that I then actually realized Yokozuna was a rank that you could acquire and achieve in sumo wrestling. I thought his first name was Yoko, last name Zuna. Mr. Zuna, we have your
this moment.
We have your table waiting. It wasn't until years later I'm watching like ESPN2 or ESPN3 or ESPN The Ocho, and they're showing sumo wrestling, and they show a graphic with a Yokozuna, and I'm like, that's not Rodney. That's the kind of thing you can get on Sunday morning with us at Busted Open.
That's what Bernie DC said, Mr. Zuna on line one for Justice. I didn't know that's what I just thought that's his name. I don't know, Yokozuna.
Jack, do you want to know another sumo distinguishment?
No. Or Rikishi. Yes, I do.
Rikishi.
Rikishi's also?
Yeah.
What's a higher level, Rikishi or Yokozuna?
I think Yokozuna.
Yokozuna is a higher level.
I think,
did you know this all along, Jimmy, and you didn't say?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I didn't hear the confessional this week. I confess that I didn't hear the confessions this weekend because I've been tempted to phone in, but I don't want to rat myself out. Let's put it.
Then we had somebody from Pittsburgh, where I live now. We had somebody from Pittsburgh. His name is Dino. He called to give a confession, and he confessed he didn't start watching wrestling until 2002. But he thinks Bret Hart's overrated. He doesn't understand all the technical prowess and all the praise that Bret gets. And he said that he's the only other person he's ever told was his wife. He was in the car with his wife. I had his wife get on the phone, and I told her to drive his ass through the Liberty Tunnels here in Pittsburgh and drop him off and kick him out of the car. Like I did a full marriage counseling, and I asked, and I got her on the phone. She was Sister Rebecca. I asked her, "What are you doing here in this relationship?" I mean, we did some marriage counseling. We do it all on the Sunday Busted Open. It is really, you must tune in live or on demand via the app because we solve all the world's problems.
That is, you definitely got to tune in every Sunday. The confessionals are definitely becoming one of the popular things to check out. So definitely check that out to see more of Justin. Hear more of Justin, I should say. Jimmy, how about you? Any thoughts on the show? Any thoughts on Andrade or Truth or overall thoughts, and where can the world find you?
That was a fine episode. Andrade, like you said, I liked his presentation. And it wasn't a complete squash match. It was, like you said, Jack, on your Twitter, it was a little level above an enhancement match. Let's put it that way. A tough spot for Creed to be in. But, hey, you know, it is what it is. Somebody has to sometimes be the fall guy. And what can you do? And Truth is just gold. What can I tell? Regeneration X. Oh my goodness! I laugh out loud. If I was in the room and trying to keep a straight face and supposed to keep a straight face, I wouldn't be able to do it with Truth. And it's been many times where he's got me like to crack up. As far as where you can reach me, obviously, like you said, here on Monday nights with Triple J, having a blast doing this, man. And on Wednesday nights with you, Jack and Issa, reviewing Dynamite. And, you know, the Roughing It Up podcast with my good brother in stripes, Brian Hebner and RJ, who holds the glue together. This past week for our 100th episode, we had Diamond Dave LaGreca on. It was a blast, man. We went longer than we normally do. Let's put it that way. And Dave is a great guy and just he's so passionate. And I love the fact that he says, hey, look, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a dirt sheet reporter. I'm a fan who loves this stuff. And I'm looking forward to see, you know, big pat on the back to him for making Busted Open a 7-day a week, 24/7 deal. And he's looking to expand in the future, maybe do some new stuff. I don't know what he's got planned, but he's just, again, when you talk about planting seeds, he planted a seed saying, hey, there might be more things in the future for Busted Open, which I hope there is because it's great. And you can catch me on my social media at Jimmy Corderas on Twitter, at Real Jimmy Corderas on Instagram, where Monday through Friday I do my riff and rants, where I sometimes am positive, sometimes a little critiquing, but I don't critique to tear down. I like to tighten screws that I in my opinion, need to be tightened. And it's to help elevate, in my opinion, because all those views expressed on Ref and Rant are of those of me and me alone.
Jimmy, I heard a lot of that episode. That was a great episode. And I got to say to Brian, who Brian and I never met in person, I think we follow each other on social, but we are both Washington Commander, Washington Redskins fans. And I popped huge on the fun fact of him revealing that what his father's grandfather or his grandfather's grandfather was a conductor of the band for the marching. That popped me huge. So I, you know, that was awesome. Pass my fandom jealousy on to him, please.
And this week we're gonna have Cody Diener on, which you know, I know Cody from being up here in Canada, fellow Canadian, and great mind for the business. It's gonna be a fun listen.
Well, here's Jack's confessional. I went to Sting's last match in TNA when he was in TNA, and Cody Diener was wrestling there, and he had the Hulk Hogan kind of a Fu Manchu mustache beard. And I was like, I'm going to be the one guy that's like all in on Cody Diener at this show. And I shaved my face. So I had just the Cody Diener mustache. And so if you see any pictures, I have a few pictures.
Oh, I need to see pictures of this. Pictures or it didn't happen, Farmer.
So, I'll see if I can find it. I can't grow it in that well, so it doesn't look that great, but it exists. Maybe I'll show you guys. Maybe not on air, though. That'll be it for us. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. And you can also check me out on the After AEW show here on Wrestling Inc. Make sure to check out the After NXT show coming up tomorrow and follow At Wrestling for all your wrestling news. And at this time, I'm going to hit the end stream button.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.